up another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. I'm your host, Rika the Vines, also known as Ricky Vrance, and a great episode for you today. Today we have Chrissy Mayer. She is the host of Wet Spot on Compound Media, also the Chrissy Mayer Podcast. And you can find those shows anywhere you can get podcasts, including YouTube, so Google Play, iTunes, all that stuff. She's a comedian. She's a podcaster. She's super funny. She's super interesting. We had a really personal conversation in regards to some of our upbringing and really getting personal into our relationships with people and so many different things. And it's a nice change because we've been doing a lot of episodes strictly more on current events and censorship and that type of stuff. So I think these type of discussions are also very useful because there's a lot of people are going through the same internal struggles that we chat about on this show. So I know you guys will really enjoy this conversation and tons of news. So I'm going to try to make this intro fast. Obviously, the usual things. I have a Patreon page. If you can support the show financially, please do. I tried to do this value for value thing. If you get some value out of the show, try to give some value in return, either on Patreon or I have a PayPal account. You can tip the show or rate, review, share the show. All those things help. Value doesn't necessarily have to be financial. But if you do help me on Patreon, if you do support the show on Patreon, I do let you know who I'm booking and all that type of stuff that's in the works. So also tons of stuff with the Union of the Unwanted. Sam kind of announced it on his recent show with Whitney Webb. The Union of the Unwanted is going to become its own show. It's going to become its own thing in regards to having its own RSS feed. It's going to have its own YouTube channel, BitChute channel, Odyssey channel. It's going to have its own accounts. Did I say RSS feed? I probably already said RSS feed. So look out for that. We're going to have a website and all that stuff. So we're in the works. Midnight Mike from the OBDM show, Charlie Robinson from the Macroaggression podcast, and also well known for his books that he's written, and then Sam Tripoli and I have all decided to kind of make it its own thing and give it its own home. And we might still do it open source where we share it on all our platforms and that type of stuff, but that's still kind of being figured out as we kind of take this next step with the show. We think it could be something special, so we're just trying to take advantage of it and giving it a home, giving it its own places. So if you're specifically looking for those shows, you can do that. Also, I just joined Float. I have a personal page, so you can look me up there, Ricky Verandas. My show, The Ripple Effect Podcast, is also now on BitChute, thanks to Matt at Content Safe, which if you listen to the most recent Union of the Unwanted, you'll know all about what he does. And I'm also getting my stuff hopefully very soon on Odyssey or Library, whatever website you use, it'll be there. And it's awesome. I'm so happy to be helping Float and Odyssey. If you go on odyssey.com, it is a awesome, really awesome looking website, easy to use, tons of features. Just it really is a awesome YouTube because you can actually go down some rabbit holes, you can actually search some terms and actually get some interesting results. So I highly recommend you guys checking it out. Once I do have a channel up and going on my YouTube channel, which is RV Theory 6, or you can look up Ricky Verandas or the Ripple Effect Podcast, any of those things will bring you right to my YouTube channel. I'll put in the show description links to all these other platforms I'm on. Hopefully very soon, if you just search Ripple Effect Podcast on Odyssey, Float, then you can find me on all these platforms. So I'll have a Float personal page and a Float Ripple Effect podcast page. I'm glad I can support these up and coming newer platforms. And what else? I feel like I'm forgetting some stuff. I think that might be it. I think this intro has been long enough. Enjoy the show, guys, and I'll see you on the next one. Awesome. Well, thanks for being with me.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I've been, I think last time we've been on a show together, it was the Union of the Unwanted. And
yeah, I love those shows.
We're doing another one tonight if you can join us.
Ooh, I do my, that's the thing is I do my own show every Monday. And I think I was able to do them over the summer because I was doing my show on a different day, or I was putting it together like in a different way. But because I do, it starts at 7:30 in the city. So by the time I get back, it's like maybe 10-ish, but maybe I'll try to get on
my phone or something. East Coast time? Are you in the East Coast?
Yes.
Yeah, I live in Massachusetts, so yeah, mm. we start around 7, but some of these go kind of long. I mean, a couple episodes ago, we went 3 hours, and
wow,
it was like 10 o'clock, and my kids, they always wait for me which is awesome, but and then sometimes I feel bad, but I don't want to cut it short either if the conversation's flowing or whatnot. I'm always like, well, this is important. Let me keep rolling and keep recording. But it does make for, you know, by time, because I fast during the day and then I eat at night. So I don't eat until after the show.
Really?
So, yeah.
So the first time you eat is at 10 o'clock?
Well, it's a matter of whenever I'm done with my day, because I always eat and have a glass of wine and that's my night. Like, so I'm productive all day. I don't do any, you know, I don't eat anything. Literally like no calories besides liquid calories, like no alcohol, just caffeine and like coffee and water basically all day. And I work out during the day. So like I'll do like a pre-workout stuff, you know, mixture or whatever, just like nitric oxide or whatnot, because I go to the gym before work in the morning. So I'm usually like I need a little bit of caffeine just to like wake me up, you know, because I'm at 5 a.m. or 6 a.m. when you're.
Wow. You know, so yeah. You do black coffee. You do nothing in your coffee.
No.
And then
no.
You just have like air and fumes until nighttime.
Yeah. Well, it sounds crazy, right? I've done a lot of shows on the ketogenic diet. And so I'm sure a lot of people are sick of me talking about it. But there's so many interesting things linked to that topic. Like I've had Jim Abrams on, who did Naked Gun and Airplane. He was a filmmaker who did all those hilarious comedies. And he's linked to the diet because he had a son who had these violent seizures and they couldn't figure out what was causing them. Or couldn't find, well, they knew what was causing it, but they didn't have a solution. So he went to all these doctors. He was a famous, famous person in Hollywood. So he had access to all the best doctors and hospitals. And nobody gave him any solution that wasn't surgery or prescription drug. And so after years of this stuff, eventually he found out there's some research at Johns Hopkins that you could actually put your body in ketosis and your brain can run off ketones as an energy source instead of like glucose, and it would actually resolve this issue. So he ended up putting his son on the ketogenic diet, found out that that's because your body's a hybrid car. It can run off fats or, you know, glucose as the energy source. Most of us, when we're constantly taking in some type of sugar or carbs that turn into sugar, we're sugar burning machines. So most of us, if we go longer than 3-4 hours without eating, we get hungry. Well, if you get your body in ketosis, so that's why it's called fat storage, because you're storing it. You're supposed to be storing it for when you need it, for when you know, food wasn't guaranteed for, you know, since the beginning of civilization until recently. So fat storage was for those times where you didn't have food and you would go long periods of time without eating. Then you would start burning that fat storage. Well, we never get to that fat storage because we keep giving ourselves sugar, so it never needs to burn that fat. So the idea of the ketogenic diet, I mean, there's a lot of other health related things that it's really beneficial for, like cognitive function. I mean, people, I sound like an idiot sometimes on this podcast. I could just imagine if I wasn't fasting and doing ketosis, I would
sound. No, that's cool. But I've done fasts. I've done like all sorts. I've done like the Master Cleanse for 22 days once, which is like you have nothing but this concoction of like lemon, I think it's like grade B maple syrup and cayenne pepper. Like you drink nothing but that stuff. And like you just, that was an interesting process because I would just like, you know, first you're like, oh, I'm so hungry, but like the mixture keeps it's enough, I guess, you know, sugar to keep your brain working, but it's supposed to be like a cleanse, right? And like, you know, wash out all the stuff and like, because I guess most people have what, like a couple pounds of crap like stuck inside them. And
well, you don't think about it, but your body actually uses resources to digest the food. And when the quality of our food, I mean, think about like just read the ingredients on a side of any snack or whatever you're eating, even if it's a protein bar or whatever, there's tons of ingredients in there. So your body has to process all that, and that all takes work, and not all those things that your body's processing are good for you. You know, like, I forget who said it, but like what you're eating is either helping or hurting you, you know? So there's going to be some things that are probably hurting you. Your body takes some resources to process. So when you do a fast, you're literally like giving your digestive system a break, and it's giving time to clear out everything, you know? So there's tons of benefits of it, but I couldn't do it for the longest time because I needed my body to kind of reteach it to burn fats for energy instead of sugar for energy. And because I was one of those people where if I didn't eat before I went to go work out or play basketball or play soccer or do some type of physical activity, I would be like, oh my God, my blood sugar is low. I'm lightheaded and whatnot. And then now I can go all day without eating and just eat whenever, because I like to eat and have a glass of wine. So like once I'm ready to eat, like my body just shuts down. Like I'm, you know, just always on the go all day. And then like now it's my time to relax. So anytime I eat, it's almost like I've taught my brain to be like, hey, you're relaxing now, right? So I can't just aww, eat and just go do something after. Most of the time, like if I eat something, it's like I'm ready to just kind of wind down the day. I've put in my, you know, all my work for the day, and I'm now it's time to kind of just, you know, relax for a little bit. But we do it also as a method of like my wife and I, that will be our time to kind of have like a glass of wine, enjoy each other's company. Because, you know, when you have kids or even just living in the East Coast, it's always like go, 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 go. You know, I heard you say,
oh,
that,
yeah,
you know, on an interview, I don't know if it was on, you were interviewing somebody or you being interviewed about how, you know, you were thinking about, oh, that lockdown sucks, but having a couple of weeks off isn't the worst of things. And I think, especially in the East Coast, like initially, I think a lot of us got that kind of feeling.
Yeah,
right?
That's how they got us. That's how they hoodwinked everybody, because nobody takes vacations. We all work when we're sick. Like, I don't know, almost every boss I've ever had, I've been like afraid to take actual sick days. So when it was March and it was like, oh, we can go home for 2 weeks, I was like, and get paid? I was like, yeah, let's do it. And I think a lot of people felt the same.
Yeah,
and
no,
here we are. No,
yeah,
almost December.
Tell me about it. Yeah, no, I felt the same way too in regards to, I'm like, okay, even though I think this is all bullshit, at least there's some benefit in possibly spending some more time with your friends and family. And I know so many people who are just like, they just never punch out. You know, on weekends they're working. They're working, you know, late during the week. So by the time they get home, they're kissing their kids to sleep and that's it. That's, you know, what they consider quality time, I guess. And that's it. So I'm like, oh, you know, maybe we can use this to kind of hit reset. And at the time, I remember using, like, thinking of the term and not thinking of it in a negative way. Like, yeah. I'm like, oh, we can hit reset and we can kind of like rethink what's important in life. Like, you're going to spend more. I had friends of mine who text messaged me and they're like, oh, I'm so, you know, this has kind of been nice because I've been able to spend more time with the kids and this and that. And I'm like, well, what does that tell you? Maybe you have your priorities all fucked up. You know, maybe,
yeah,
maybe you shouldn't be spending so much time at work. Maybe, you know, maybe it's because at the end of the day, like, kids don't give a shit if you raise them in $1 million house or $100,000 house. Like, they just want,
nope,
you to be around.
Yeah.
They want attention. They want, you know, just the comfort and somebody to give them a conversation and play with them or whatnot. So we get so caught up in like, oh, I'm doing it for my kids. I'm doing it for my kids. Well, and then you're not a part of their upbringing. And next thing you know, they're fucked up or, you know, if you're not influencing them, somebody is. And if it's not you, it could be a negative influencer. So next thing you know, they're on drugs or depressed or whatnot. And so I think we, especially in the East Coast, we have it all wrong.
Oh, for sure. Like my dad, like he, same thing. Like he worked when we were little, he was a landscaper, but then he lucked out and got a Teamster job and he would be working like 14, 16 hour days, like, and kind of happy to do it because like, I don't think he wanted to be really like home raising us or talking to us. And it's like, yeah, but now that we're older, I feel like it's like, yeah, we don't really have a great relationship with you, Dad. You like never really talked to us. You kind of like left it to Mom and now she's gone. And it's like, yeah, you haven't spent any time working on your relationship with the three of us. So it's like, yeah, don't be shocked that we're not like falling all over ourselves to like call and visit all the time.
Yeah, that's the kind of the long-term perspective people don't take as parents is like, okay, well, you know, later in life when I want them to be a little closer, are they just going to resent the fact that I wasn't really involved, you know? And this idea that making money for the family is enough, it's just like, oh, I'm doing my part. It's like, well, not really, because you know, they've done studies, and I think I said this on the last podcast, so I apologize to anybody who's heard me talk about the study before, but they had like this baby monkey who they took away from its mother for the first time, and then they put it in a maze where it could go either in one direction. Oh, and they starved it. That's the very important part of the study that I have to include because it kind of makes the point. It starved the monkey, and one path in this maze led to food, and one path led to this stuffed animal that looked like its mother. And it went towards the mother because that's how important comfort was. It was more important than even what we think is the most necessary thing of food. So that's something that's like so important. Like as parents, it's like it to me, like we own a small construction company. And so, you know, that's what I do. And I've been able to kind of stunt its growth to some extent because I want to have the freedom of, like, to me, it's like the financial gain's not worth the lack of freedom. Like, I know plenty of people who make, you know, who are, sometimes I look at them like, fuck, man, like, if I was just more motivated, if I was just more focused, if I worked a little longer hours, I could be as successful as them. And then I have to, like, rethink what I'm thinking. And I'm like, you know what? Success is what? Like money? Like what? Who the fuck cares? They're miserable. They don't see their family. They don't see their friends. They don't, yeah. They don't have any free time for their hobbies. So it's like to, you know, we have to really think about what is success? What is progress? What are all these things that we've kind of been brainwashed to believe like, hey, this is what makes you happy. Then you get there and you're like, wait, I'm not happy.
Yeah. That like, and thinking about what was like finding a benefit to the lockdown stuff, which is good for me. It was like, I was just buying way more stuff because I was in the city every day, walking by Sephora, walking by Starbucks. And I just was like, oh, I'm sad today. I'm going to spend $20 on a new lipstick, you know? And it's just like, I'm buying less stuff. And I'm like, oh, I don't need that stuff. Like, I'm just, I don't know, it feels better to save. And then I'm like, oh, wow, maybe I could, like, I don't know, buy a house or something. Or, you know, I still sort of consider myself like not old enough to have a house. But it's like, obviously, I'm just stuck in like this like kid mentality, you know.
Or is it just not as important to you? Because that's the one thing that's really changing, too, is back in the day, like when our parents were growing up, like buying a house was like the pinnacle of like you did it, you know. And now it's like some people are like, no, I don't need a fucking house to define me. I don't like, okay, I don't own a house. Well, I have fucking freedom to move and do stuff. I'm sure you're familiar with Dr. Christopher Ryan, who wrote the book Sex at Dawn.
No.
Really? What?
Well, because it's on my reading list.
Oh, dude, he's been on the Rogan podcast. He's been on a bunch of, you know, he's friends.
What is it called?
So it's Sex at Dawn, and it's if I could probably find it, it's over here somewhere. Okay. But it's I'm a huge fan of his. I had him on my podcast a while ago, and he wrote a book also, Civilized to Death. But Sex at Dawn was about the history of monogamy and really, like, you know, is it natural, is it not natural? You know, he always uses the example of, he's like, well, we have teeth, so we're designed, obviously, to eat meat, but you can choose to be a vegan, but you're designed to eat meat. Same thing, like, you can decide to marry one person and stay with them forever. It's not necessarily what our hormones and our body is naturally designed to do, but you can, and he got a lot of shit because everybody's like, oh, you're just justifying, you know, being a man slut or whatever. But it really wasn't. It was just like, he's an anthropologist. He goes back in history and kind of looks at our primal ancestors. But that aspect of his second book, the aspect of his second book called Civilized to Death, about like what is progress. And like he says, he look at the winners, right? So we have this game of life where the winners we look at as the people who have all the financial money and they have the houses and the luxury stuff and all that stuff. And
then they're like high ranking.
Yeah.
And then you meet them. CEOs.
And you meet them and they're miserable. So if the winners of this game are miserable, then shouldn't we rethink the game? Like, it's a rigged game. It's the whole game's bullshit. So we tell you that, like, this is what brings you happiness, or like, this is what progress is. And then we think like, oh, things are getting faster and we got more material things and this and that, but nobody's happier. So it's like, so what the fuck is progress when you meet people in the Amazon or, you know, they study people in the Amazon who have no anxiety or depression, are healthier. I was born in Portugal on a farm. I wasn't there for long, but my parents were raised there and they were happy. You know, they were more stressed now in America than they are there. And, you know, I've had conversations with my parents about this whole idea of like, okay, you come to America for to get ahead financially because you think like, oh, this is awesome. It's a land of opportunity. But for that opportunity to get those financial things that you think you want, there's sacrifice and there's a lack of community. There's a lack of having free time. There's a lack of having just energy to do other things that you enjoy. And the stress puts really harms your health and it harms your relationship with others because that stress ends up affecting, you know, your when you hang out with your friends or your significant other or your kids or whatever. So I think it almost seems like we've been tricked into believing like this is what you should do, and then you do it and you're like, oh dude, I'm fucking unhappy. But then we tell younger people, hey, stop being lazy, get a job, work more hours, and it's like, wait, now we're telling them to fall for the same shit we fell for.
Oh yeah, like in college, and I've said this on my other podcast too, but my training in college was like, oh, like be a feminist, you don't need men, like be a boss bitch, like you don't need anybody, you know, work, hustle. And then I got into, you know, then I was working, always working a full-time job. Then I got into comedy. So I had like two full-time jobs going for like years and years and years. And then, and finally now it's like, oh shit, now all of a sudden I have to figure out if I want to have a kid like yesterday, you know what I mean? Before my body goes, no, we decided for you. And the answer is no, enjoy your cats, you know? So it's almost like, oh, like not like I felt tricked by life, but you know, I've been told for years, like hustle and push and work and you don't need anybody. And like, okay, I dropped like the feminist bullshit thing once I realized like, it's just, it wasn't for me. I was like, that's not the way to go through life, is like hating 50% of the people you encounter and like, it's not their fault. You know what I mean? Like just, it's better to take responsibility and just kind of like try to clear everything out and be like, okay, what do I really want? Am, you know, am I focusing on the things that make me happy? But we're told, yeah, we have to work super hard and earn as much as we can. And it's crazy, and still be there for kids.
Yeah, I remember Greg Giraldo. He was one of my favorite comedians. And I was very lucky to be able to meet him a few times at local comedy clubs in Connecticut. And he, I remember hearing the story about him being this awesome attorney and how he was like, you know, an amazing attorney, and he hated his job. Like every day he went to work, he's like, I hate this job. And eventually he's like, fuck it, I'm going to be a comedian. And it's funny because like, think about it, like something that parents tell you all the time, oh, get a good job, be a lawyer, be a doctor. It's like being an attorney is like most dreams of parents. Like if your kid becomes an attorney, it's
like they made it. Wow. Mm-hmm. Like so proud of you. Like you got the best job. You're a doctor or you're a lawyer or yeah.
And he was completely unhappy, ended up being a stand-up comedian and being awesome at it. And I remember this Dave Attell story once about how Dave Attell said that he got in some legal problems. And he's like, hey, Greg, you know, they're on tour together. He's like, Greg, you know any good attorney? He's like, yeah, I'm a good attorney. And he's like, really? And I guess like he like just went to court and like just tore it up. He's like, dude, this guy was awesome at what he did. But it shows you like what good is it if you're not happy? You know, it's. I think about, I have a daughter who's 4, I have a son who's 5, and I think about like how many parents, you know, when their daughter starts dating, you know, you'd be like, oh, I don't like that guy. And it might be because he's like a musician, and you'd be like, oh, you should date that guy because his family is wealthy, or, you know, or he's going to a good college or whatnot. But like how many parents have made that mistake of pushing them in a direction of like, you know, date this guy because of financial reasons, and yet he ends up being abusive, either physically or verbally and mentally abusive. And the guy who maybe didn't have as good of a job would have been the person who would have loved and adored your child forever.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Like my mom is always, she would joke, but she would be like, tell me all the time, like you're wasting your best dating years. Like my 20s, like in doing improv, doing comedy, hanging out with they were the weirdest people for sure. But you know, I was learning how to pass the clap, and she'd be like, you're wasting your life. Like she would laugh. She'd be like, haha. Like, and then I would date somebody. And she'd be like, isn't it just as easy to fall in love with a rich guy? Like, why can't you date someone who's not a comedian? And I don't know. But she was saying that because like she and my dad struggled when they were first married. Like he was a landscaper. My mom didn't even get a job till I was in first grade. They had no health insurance. So it was like, they were struggling. And I think that's all anybody can do is, you know, your parents don't know everything. They're just like, they have their limited experience and they think they're trying to help you do better than they did. That's it. And it's like, the sooner you can realize like your parents are just people like with a limited set of skills and experiences, like, it's kind of a weight off, you know?
Oh, absolutely. When I became a parent, that's one thing I picked up real quickly was like this idea, this illusion that you have when you're a kid, that your parents are all knowing and you look up to them like, oh, if they said it, it's because they know for a fact and I should listen to them and they're the adult. And then you get, you know, you become that parent and you're just like, I'm just making this shit up as I go. I have no idea if the way I'm handling things is going to traumatize them or help them.
Yeah.
And I think that's a in a lot of cases, that's kind of a fear. It's like, you don't, a lot of times you don't know how the child's taking it, like being too hard or not being hard enough. Like, you know, there's some kids that you're harder on and it works out. And then there's other kids you're hard on them and it traumatizes them and vice versa. There's kids that you give a little bit of freedom and they blossom, and other kids you give a little bit of freedom and they end up in prison. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, how do you
I think the number one thing, and I see my boyfriend do this with his son, he's like 9, is like their communication is so solid that even if, like, if your communication with your kid is good and they can tell you how they feel, like, you'll be able to figure out, like, if you were too harsh on them or if they're like afraid to tell you stuff or if they're like, you know, I grew up like I was super afraid of my dad because he just would like, he fucking threw a chair at me once. He would like yell, scream. Like, he just was a scary dude. And like, then everyone grew up, nobody was challenging him. We would all tiptoe around him. Like, don't get him mad. Like, don't wake the bear. And then, so now as an adult, I'm like, oh, fuck it. No, I'm going to call him an asshole. Like, when he's being an asshole. But like, nobody in his life has ever done that. So it's like, I am the first person to stand up to him, which is hard and like sucks for me. But if the communication was better, like everything would be easier. And now we have all these problems. And he's like, oh, why don't people tell me stuff? It's like, you don't talk to us. You never talk to us. So I think that's key, is seeing somebody who's got like a great relationship with their kid. It's like, oh, they talk all the time. He's always asking him about his feelings.
Yeah, it's funny. I have a similar relationship with my mother where she's always like, how come you don't talk to me about anything? I'm like, because we don't. I'm like, you judge everything and all, you don't want to listen. You just want to talk. You want me to tell you two things and then you're just going to critique it and tell me how I'm doing it wrong or how I should have done it this way or that way. She's borderline a crazy person sometimes. But so I've never had a very good relationship with my mother. And my father, he was just a typical construction worker, similar to your landscaping a dad, where he just looked, he worked long days, and then when he got home, it's like, leave him the fuck alone because he's tired.
Oh yeah, you know, so. Let him drink his 6 beers, put his feet up, like,
yeah,
yeah.
I mean, it was the same thing. Like, I never really got into organized sports till later in life because I was playing soccer when I was really young because against my religion, being Portuguese and not playing soccer at some point in my life. And you know, when I played soccer, my mom would bring it to soccer, and my mom could care less about soccer. She just went there to gossip with the other moms. So nobody talked to me about like how I did or what I should do or you know, how I played. So I lost interest in it.
And, man.
And I didn't get into it till later in life. And like, so my son's 5 and he's like, he's killing it in soccer because we talk all the time about everything. We talk about how he played, what he could improve. I just sometimes just let him talk and let him be like, hey, how do you think you did? You know, and just like you said, just something simple. Like, you don't have to always have something profound to say to them, but just talk to them and have
really listen to everything, not just what they're saying, what they're not saying. Do they look anxious? Like, feel what's coming off of them, you know, which is like easier for some people than others. And it's like interesting that your parents like took you to your like to soccer, because I was really big into springboard diving. I started when I was 11, like lessons at 10, but like became obsessed at 11 and did it all through school, all through college, like got a small scholarship to my college. Like, I was so good at it, but I never thought I was good enough because like my parents weren't like hanging up my trophies. They weren't like asking me about it at all. They weren't like, oh, what's your favorite dive? Or like, they would just be like, oh, we get kind of scared when your head gets close to the board. I'm like, well, that's how you do it, you know? And then I got this sort of twisted thing where I was like, oh, the better I do in diving, like the more they're going to acknowledge me. And like, I just thought as a way, like the better I did, the maybe the more love I would get looking back, you know, now that I have a therapist. It's like, I was trying to get there through accomplishments instead of like being loved for the sake of being loved because you're their kid and you deserve it or whatever. So I was just like, oh, I have just to be like, I have to be really good. I have to get first every time. And I would get first most of the time, but I still never felt like good enough.
Yeah. It's funny how with anybody else in your life, you can look at things logically and really kind of have a grip or some type of control of your emotions. Or if you get out of hand, you can maybe catch yourself next time. But with like really close family, it's so hard to just look at things logically. Like you always go back on that cycle or that routine of like how you interact with one another, how you see one another. it's like, it's so hard to like just see my parents as just like, okay, they're just people who apparently don't understand like what I'm doing or how I want to live my life or whatever. Instead, it's like, why don't they like care? Why aren't they proud of me? And if they are, why aren't they telling me they're proud of me? It's like, it almost gets to the point where sometimes I feel like you have to catch yourself and be like, listen, I have to look at them like other people. And other people, if they don't give a shit about, you know, what I'm doing, then it doesn't bother me. And I shouldn't let that it bother me just because they're my parents. Like, if they don't get it, just come to terms that they don't get it, you know? And it is really hard. I mean, I have relatives, you know, one or two relatives where like every time we talk about anything that is somewhat on a more serious scale, you know, a more serious topic like politics or current events or whatever, many, you know, controversial topics I talk about on the show, you know, vaccines or, you know, geopolitics. And it always turns into argument. Like, it always gets personal. And I'm like, fuck. I'm like,
that's how it is with my dad. Yeah. He's not open to hearing like really anything.
Yeah.
It's wild. Yeah.
And do you try going at it from like all different avenues? Like, oh, let me approach it this way or that way. And it still doesn't work.
No, he kind of, he's not. It's so funny. Growing up, all he said to me was be open-minded. Yet he's not, you know, like be open-minded in the way that he's open-minded. Like I grew up and he was like all about like Ross Perot. And he was like, fuck politics. It's a sham. And then I basically find out that he voted for Biden most recently, like to impress his like brand new fucking girlfriend. So I'm just like, oh, I can't. And that would have been nice if I had, you know, had these kind of conversations. But that's the thing with my boyfriend and his family. They're like awake, right? As we would say, like they're awake. We can talk about vaccines. We can talk about the deep state. We can talk about like the bullshit, all the bullshit aspects of the lockdowns and the, you know, virus and stuff and how much Cuomo sucks. And like, I can't have those kind of conversations like with my dad or like anybody in my family. I think like he just kind of scared everybody. Like when he gets mad, everyone gets scared and like disperses, you know, and we're like, oh, because that's what I learned in therapy. Like, you know, when you're a kid, you have certain coping mechanisms that get you through because your goal as a kid is survival. Your goal is not to like challenge somebody or like be, you know, be heard or, you know, have your feelings, you know, taken care of. It's more like, oh, like this person's in charge of my food and my housing. You know, when they get angry, I'm just going to avoid them, I guess, or I'm going to go like with my mom, we're going to go shopping and we'll see him in a few hours when he calms down. But like a lot of us, it takes a lot of work to break out of that pattern as an adult. That's why when we go home for the holidays, we get back in our patterns that we were in as kids. And like, for me, that's like totally excusing my dad's behavior. And oh, that's what everybody, me and my brother and sister were like, well, he's just a bad communicator. And it's like, no, he's an asshole. Like it finally took like a lot of talks with my boyfriend. He's like, no, it's not bad. Communicating is something else. He's like being an asshole. And so it's kind of like, oh, wow. It's like these behaviors that we were excusing for decades. It's like, you just wake up suddenly and you're like, oh yeah, this is just called, if any other person were talking to me this way, I would walk away and never fuck with them again. But it's like you make excuses for people in your family because that's what you have to do to kind of survive. So, but it's, most people aren't really looking at that. You know, a lot of people aren't in therapy. A lot of people are not having, and it takes like, it's hard conversations. Like I got in a huge blow up with my dad over Thanksgiving and I left on the last, like I stayed the last night in a hotel, like with my boyfriend and like, you know, my sister's doing her classic middle child routine. She's trying to be peacekeeper. She's trying to get us all together for breakfast. And I'm like, no, he was like, he really like, you know, treated me badly, said some shitty things, like, you know, like our, like to describe it in a short way, like my family dynamic is nobody really talks to the person that they want to talk to. They'll try to talk to somebody else to get information about that person. Like me and my sister were very close growing up. So like, my dad, like he goes to me to get information about her and like vice versa. And you get so tired of that because especially when there's shit going on that like really isn't any of your business or they don't involve you in, it's like, and I think I just hit my limit on that this weekend because it was like, there was some other crazy shit going on. And I don't know, I'm not explaining it well, but I just was like, oh, enough of this dumb, like, dynamic that we've always done. And I'm not going to just say that you're a bad communicator. It's like, no, you're shitty.
Well, that's the thing. Sometimes when you blow up on a family member or, you know, a close relative, it's not over that one thing. Like, it's that fuse has been burning for a long time. So it's so small that it's like, okay, anybody else who just did the exact same thing, if it was a complete stranger, I'd have no problem biting my tongue. But it's like, it's just like, I'm so exhausted doing this over and over again. And then the worst part about that shit is the fact that even if you don't think you have any blame and that you didn't spark it, and you still feel bad about blowing up sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like, they might not even be stressing about it, and you're the one who feels like shit and have all this anxiety, and you feel like this weight on your shoulders. Because I don't care what anybody says, it's way easier to just get along with everybody than it is to dislike somebody or have friction with somebody. That aspect of humans interacting when there's friction is just, it's awful. Because when you know there's tension there and you're trying to ignore it or you're trying to avoid it, as you get older, you try to just filter out any of the negative people in your life. I try to have less interactions with people that I know that I butt heads with, and then more interactions with people I don't. And believe me, I'm always self-reflecting, and I think we always should, because I think it is easy to always blame the other person and then be like, okay, maybe I could have handled it differently. Maybe I could have went at it differently. But it, honestly, I truly believe, and I know it from personal experiences, there's just some people you just, no matter what avenue you go down and which way you approach it, it's always going to lead to the same thing. The outcome's always going to be the same. I've done in my personal life where there's people that I'm like, maybe it's me. Maybe it is me. They keep saying it's me. Maybe it actually is me. And then I'm like, let me try to figure this shit out. Let me figure out how I can go about it. And then I find out that, like, I'm putting all this effort and trying to figure out how to communicate.
You're in their head. You're thinking what they're thinking. Like, how do I help them get them to where I need to be?
Exactly.
What could I have said? Because I know what their issues are. Like, this is my whole life. Yeah. Like, I know this person has XYZ triggers. So how do I, not?
Well, the worst part is they know your triggers and they push those buttons. That's the thing that pisses me off. Is like, sometimes, it's like, okay, there's certain triggers that it's just like, I've been called, like, we'll have a discussion about whatever, and I've been called a anti-vaxxer. I've been called a conspiracy theorist, Alex Jones lover. I mean, so many ridiculous things.
Very creative insults, by the way. It's like, you know what else was a conspiracy theory? Epstein, and his pedo island.
I use that example all the time.
Anytime somebody's like, oh, conspiracy theory, I'm like, everything that's true was a conspiracy theory at one point. Like, any kind of bombshell story.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, child trafficking, the COVID lockdown not being necessary, or it being, I mean, it, literally 9 months ago, if you brought up that this virus was no more than a bad flu, people were like, what the fuck are you talking about? They'd be all upset. And now
more people
say,
are killed by cars, by smoking, by cancer every year. And there's not this like, oh, we got to shut the whole economy down until we figure out cancer. We're shutting the whole economy down until we figure out how people aren't going to get murdered by cars. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And now today we can all just openly say 99% of people will be fine. And it's not a conspiracy theory where people were getting like ripped off YouTube nine months ago for saying this stuff. And now it's just openly acceptable. It's acceptable because it was such bullshit that now there's so much evidence of it that you can't deny it. But it's just like people were being called conspiracy theorists and all this stuff. So there's certain words that, I mean, people know, like, that trigger. It's like, if somebody wants to debate or argue or even just discuss and challenge my ideas on anything, I'm open to it. I mean, I love doing that. I mean, I had, you had him on your show too. I've had Roger Stone on my show quite a few times, and I had
God, he's cool. He's a cool dude. Yeah. The best part of my interview with him was when we were just talking about pizza for like 10 minutes. Like, I was like, I can't believe I'm just like shooting the shit about types of crusts, with like the Roger Stone. But he was a cool guy. I was like a little intimidated for sure, but I was like, oh my God, he's talking to me. He's doing my podcast. Why?
He's actually, I had him on some years ago when he came out with his LBJ, the case against LBJ, the JFK assassination book. And then I had him on again with about his Clinton book. And one of the times he was on, he had some IT issues, some video issues. And we just end up like bullshitting while he was figuring those things out. And super nice. And everybody I've talked to that have met him, same thing. Like, they're like, he's super pleasant. You might not agree with all his views. You might not agree with all his tactics, but he is a very pleasant person. And like he says, like, politics isn't beanbag. You know, it's a dirty game. So he's a politician or he's a political consultant. That means he has to play the dirty game in that dirty manner to get ahead. So, you know, I mean, I know there's a lot of issues with Roger Stone, but one thing I always give him a lot of credit for is that he's willing to go on a lot of different shows. He's willing to take questions. I just had him on the Union Unwanted, the last episode. And a bunch of people didn't know he was coming on. I had some people on there who were trying to, you know, take it as an opportunity to kind of grill Roger Stone because I might have never talked to him or had the opportunity to talk to him. And he handled it well, you know. And then just a couple of weeks before that, I had Greg Palast on, who's like super lefty, always on Democracy Now!, wrote a book about how Trump stole 2020 election and all this stuff. And so it's like, you know, I'm open. I know that, and similar to yourself, I've listened to a lot of your shows, and you're willing to talk to anybody and everybody, and it's not, you know, it doesn't mean it's because they agree with you or you have things in common. Sometimes it's just because you're exploring each other's just life experiences and whatnot, and I enjoy doing that. So a lot of times when I look at these like family issues, I'm like, dude, I got hours and hours of conversation. Practice. I know I can handle a conversation and quite well. And I have a lot of people on that I don't agree with, but I like, you know, I like having those discussions because it forces me to kind of reflect on where I stand and why I stand there. Because when somebody challenges your opinions and your perspectives, that whole process of having to explain it sometimes is a good time to kind of work it out and see if like I really thought this out or not. So. Like I always tell people, it's a journey. Like podcast isn't just a journey for the listeners. It's usually a journey also for the participants, the interviewer and people, you know, everybody who's involved is going on this journey of like challenging ideas and discovering new ideas and kind of figuring that all out.
Yeah. And we always say like, oh, the left, the super lefties, they have themselves in their cozy little ego chamber. They're never getting challenged. They're in la la land. It's like, well, I have to keep in mind, like, I don't do that for myself. I don't even want to say on the other side. I don't even consider myself like I'm on the right or I'm on the far right or whatever. But it's like, I never want to, you know, get myself in a place where I'm not talking to people with different opinions and, being challenged. So, and I think it also looks good if you have a podcast and like, oh, you're having people from all over the political spectrum, you know, all types of people on, because that's the thing. It's like, you got to be able to talk to anybody. And it's so funny because I feel so, it's like podcasting is so freeing for me because I know like nobody in my family is a fan of what I do and, or listens to my stuff. Like I could go off, I probably will, like maybe on the show that I do, at Compound Media. I'm actually going to go tape it after this one. I'll probably go off about my Thanksgiving situation. And it's like, I don't even care because it's like nobody listens to my shit, and which is sad to hear that. You're like, oh, nobody in my family like listens to your podcast. But no, it's great. It's like, that's why I got into stand-up. I would get on stage and I'd be like, oh, I feel more comfortable in front of this room full of strangers speaking my truth, like venting in a way that's funny, right? Of course, because then it's just like therapy for me in front of a crowd. Like I felt more comfortable doing that than I actually did like sitting down and, you know, maybe talking to my dad, which is like hard and scary and he's not going to listen and he'll be shitty probably. So it's easier just like, oh, wow, if I can make a room full of people laugh about my pain and then I feel a little bit better and like this is who I can be honest in front of. I think a lot of people feel that way. It's like, oh, this is your family. It's like you've got your crusty dynamics in place and it's harder to. Because it's like, you know, for me, it's like, oh, I don't want to hurt their feelings. I can't be totally honest because I don't want to hurt this person's feelings or they're not ready to handle it or whatever. It's like kid gloves. My boyfriend calls it mayor mittens, like, you know, because it's my last name. It's like, oh, treating everybody with mayor mittens, which means like you're not really being honest. You're just like caring about their feelings more instead of like, because the thing is, the more honest you are, you're actually letting the person get to know you. And I think that's what I do. I just sort of, I'm like, all right, well, you kind of stay on a surfacey level when you're not opening yourself up.
Isn't that one of the reasons people like Trump, right? And Ross Perot, you talked about your dad and Ross Perot or Ron Paul or Bernie Sanders, is a lot of these guys, it's like they're not the perfect politicians, but there's something refreshing about just kind of feeling
it's
like you
real.
Know who, yeah, like you know who they are. Like I'm like, I might not agree with them, but I know who they are. I know where they stand. What I see seems to be what I get. So I like that aspect of it where too many people are like, to me, like I've met some really, really polite people who just seem fake. Like, and it just turns me off. I'm like, I'd rather you have some issues or some, you know, be rough around the edges, but at least I know who you are, than this person who's like this chameleon who kind of blends in everywhere and whatever group they're in, they're always like, yeah, yeah, awesome, you know? Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the person who never talks any shit about anybody ever, like never has anything negative to say. It's like, I don't trust that person. It's like,
you're absolutely
right. That's why Tina Forte is so popular. Do you know her? She went kind of like she had these viral rants over the summer and she'd be like, fuck you, Cuomo, you commie cunt. And she's the one that's like, Trump 2020, motherfucker. And, like, she's got this like shorter, like blonde hair and she's like, she's such a character, and I've actually like become friends with her because we both like, I think she lives in the Bronx or whatever. And then I would see her like at rallies and stuff. Nicest, sweetest girl, but she doesn't give a fuck, and she'll curse. She'll be real. She's like a real like lady from the Bronx, and she like is a huge patriot. She like loves Trump. She loves his country, and like she has so many fans because she's just so real. Like there's no. I think like the general public is slowly starting to become like less and less okay with like bullshit and pretense and looking at like our polished manicured news reporters like spouting the same bullshit that the other polished manicured reporters are saying on the other channel. It's like, that's why I like podcasting, like the podcast we do and like Rogan and Tim Pool. Like, that's why people are going there for their news instead of like this bullshit mainstream media nonsense. It's like, it's not real.
Well,
and they're bought off clearly. Like they're all bought.
Yeah. I remember when I started my podcast in 2013 and telling some people about it and they're like, like, really? You think just recording a conversation is going to take off? Like, this is something worth doing. I'm like, when you hang out with your friends, sometimes some of the most pleasant part of that night is you guys just getting in deep conversation and you get something out of it, or that conversation stays with you till the next day or the following day, or you end up bonding over that conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm like, all you're doing is trying to recreate that. You're recording it and you're sharing it. And I think people can gain something from it. And I could kind of foresee how refreshing it is to just hear people actually have honest discussions. Like just having, when I listen to podcasts, that's what I loved. I'm like, it doesn't sound like they're selling me something. It doesn't sound like they're trying to steer me in one direction or another. It just sounds like people talking. And as silly as that sounds, like with this like basically fabricated reality that we live in where everybody seems like they're just talking off the cuff, but the truth is like everything's scripted. It's super refreshing when you hear people just chat on a podcast.
Oh yeah. And we're not like all filtered up, you know, I don't have dog ears on. It's like, it's like the more, I don't know, the more layers of like perfectness or fakeness that like become available, it's more like that the opposite becomes way more desirable. You're like, yeah, let's see people. Not that I have to see somebody at their worst, but yeah, like just their real feelings. And it makes me excited. Like, I love that podcasting is taking off, and you can kind of listen to it absently. The people who like, you know, drive for long hours, or they just listen at work, or it's easier than sitting down and like watching a video. You know, not everybody can do that, but it's like, oh, while you're cooking. Like, I know people who will listen to podcasts when they're working out or running, and yeah, it's pretty great.
Yeah.
And then a lot, what's especially great is like if somebody's listening to this and it's like, oh shit, my family's the same way. Nobody talks to the direct person. It's all just like I want to find another word other than circle jerk, but I can't. It's just like it's like kind of sneaky, and it's all in the like name of not aggressive. Having confrontation. Like, what the, you know, it's wild.
Yeah. That's, I think, one thing that people like about, I'm always super honest on my podcast, and for two reasons. One, I've always been like super open and honest. And I think a little bit was because I used to play music and I used to write music. So I would always like spend all this time writing how I felt and try to like find how I feel and put it into words and then sing it or perform it. And so I feel like I can't turn it off. Like, I still just one of those people that I'm constantly trying to figure out where I stand and how I feel about myself or the world around me. And I'm very open to discussing it. And but I also have the benefit of nobody I really that close listens to the show. Like, not my in-laws don't listen to the show. My wife doesn't listen to the show. I mean,
great. What a relief. You know?
You know, and you're right. It really is like initially there's something about support from close friends. Like you could have a billion downloads, but if you don't know who any of them are, it doesn't mean quite as much, or at least initially it doesn't seem like it means quite as much as like a close friend that you really like saying, hey, I've been listening to your show. I'm a huge fan. You're like, oh, fuck, really? And
yeah,
even though they're just one of many, you know, there is something about like getting that appreciation from somebody who is close to you that it just, I don't know. I mean, maybe it shouldn't matter that much, but you hear it from band members, people who play in bands, comedians. They're like, oh, I go to my hometown and nobody gives a shit. Then I go play somewhere else and I have all this
wow.
love. And it's like, why? What the fuck? You know?
It's nuts. Yeah, maybe the people from back home, they see you as how you were, like, imprinted in time, how you were in high school. Like, if you were cool or not cool, or I don't know. Like, let's say you were a loser in high school, but you're crushing it now. It's like, well, the cool people aren't going to come out for that because that like fucks their paradigm up a little bit, you know?
Well,
so that's why I have like the people that are talking to me now from high school, they're all like the losers. Like I was in the middle. I wasn't cool, but I wasn't like a real loser, you know? Like I was just kind of in the middle, but I was friends with everybody. Like I saw the good in everybody, but I definitely wasn't in like the cool prom limo. But it's like the people who talk to me now, it's like none of the cool kids. It's like all the people who are like, I don't know. That sounds, I don't know. I don't mean for that to sound like superficial. Like I don't care. These people were losers in high school, but it's like, I think the cool people don't want to think that they've been passed.
They peaked too early. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, I say it all the time. I was the same way. I was, you know, I got into, because my parents weren't there to support me in organized sports. So I did the complete opposite. I'm like, fuck organized sports. I ended up playing in a metal band, skateboarding, BMXing. And yeah, I mean, I kind of always felt a little bit like as a outsider a little bit. And then, you know, and then getting into alternative media, you always feel like a little bit of an outsider. You're the guy who's like, oh, here comes a conspiracy theorist, you know? And it is, that's why I think the union of the unwanted, and it's funny because I remember talking to Sam Tripoli just about this like a week or two ago, about how I think that name has really connected with people. Because a lot of people in our world kind of feel like that, you know, they've felt like the unwanted, and it's beautiful that we've created like a community where, like, are you in the Telegram? You got to get in the Telegram.
I need to be in the Telegram.
Yeah, I'll send you the link. We're in the Telegram. I think maybe since your last appearance, we just started it after that. But we had this idea of, hey, start up Telegram. I'm like, everybody who participates after they're on and I send them the video and audio links, I'll send them the Telegram link. And we'll start like this little community. And it's cool just to see people connect on there. Like people need advice or help with something and somebody will help them out. Or just see a lot of people who also do podcasts connecting with one another after the show. So it's create like this community of the unwanted. So it just really has become this awesome thing where it's more than just a podcast. It's a community. And like I said, for some reason, when you talk about musicians, podcasters, comics, people in the alternative media community, like many of us have very, like maybe very different backgrounds and upbringings. But one thing that we kind of all have in common is at some point in our lives, we've kind of felt like the unwanted, the outsider.
Yeah. And everyone also has in common, like either wanting to find the truth or seek the truth or speak the truth. I think that's also an important tie that we all have. Like, no one, we're not trying to bullshit each other. It's like, oh, let's share what information we have. It's not like, oh, I don't want to traumatize you because, like, you're a family member or a close friend and you can't handle hearing about pedophilia. You know, I don't know.
Oh, I know. I remember when you were sharing those. It's funny because I get so pissed because it's like when people talk about, like, oh, well, Trump's tweets, this is why they're censoring it, or this article because they're censoring. I'm like, and I bring you up all the time. I'm like, you do realize Chrissy was sharing legit child porn Twitter accounts. And like that just breaks every rule and regulation and guideline Twitter has. And yet, why isn't that priority one? Why is your priority, let me censor, you know, or put a little note on Trump's tweet when he says this election was a fraud or whatever it may be, or the Hunter Biden stuff. It's like this is something that we could all agree on. It's not political. It's not left. It's not right. Like everybody can agree this should be priority one, like get this type of shit off your platform.
Yeah. How should an account like that, like be able to exist for a full 24 hours? And like, I don't know if I even did it the best, most correct way. And I just was like, this profile, we got to report this motherfucker. I was like, this is fucking gross. And it's like, I used to think like, oh, you're not going to be able to see, you know, you mentioned people mentioned like, oh, there's child porn out there on the internet, and you figure, okay, it's in the deep dark web. Where is that? I don't know what that is. I just know I've heard of it. And then somebody tagged me on like some account on Twitter. I'm like, oh my God, not only is it not in the deep dark web, it's on Twitter. It's in my pocket. It's like, it's right here. I'm looking at it. And it's like, of course I didn't want to see what I was seeing. And it was like really disturbing. And I was like, yeah, that's a young person. That is a young girl. Like this is, but then there's the part of me that's like, almost like if you're like a nurse or a doctor or a lifeguard and you're like, somebody's in trouble, it's almost like, yeah, well, not everyone's great at seeing blood, but you still have to stitch it up. It was that feeling. Yeah. I was like, I hate that I'm seeing this and that other people are seeing this, but like, we got to get in there and like dig it out. It's like, that's not going to happen by ignoring it. And some people be like, oh, how dare you? How dare you like post and share this? It's like, I'm not trying to share the thing. I'm trying to be like, this is a dude who's like creating and sharing this shit. And this shouldn't exist on Twitter. Like it, I don't know. And I ended up getting suspended and I'm like, all right, fuck, fine. I mean, can't Twitter tell the difference between like me and somebody who's making it and sharing it? But
I give you a lot of props for doing what you're doing because of all the backlash of like how people might take it or whatnot, what you're doing. Because the thing is, like you said, we all talk about it, but a lot of people think it's like a unicorn. Like, oh yeah, unicorns exist somewhere, maybe. You know, it's like, no, this really does exist. And here's the proof. And, you know, unfortunately, you're going to have to share it to expose it. So, like, yeah. And I did the same thing when you shared it. I clicked on it because I'm like, I want to know if this really is like, is this really what I think it is? So when I clicked on it, it was the same thing. It's like, whoa.
You're like, whoa.
Yeah. I'm glad I see how big of an issue this is. Like this, that these accounts aren't just made up. Like people would say like, oh, there's child porn or whatever on Twitter. And you're like, yeah, maybe, you know, probably like you said, maybe it takes some like IT guy with some really creative search tactics to get to it. And no, it's like, oh no, it's just here. Anybody can just click on it.
Yeah. You're one tag away. You're one at away from being like, oh God, you know?
Yeah. And that's bullshit that you got suspended for sharing that. It's like you weren't sharing. Wait, why were you suspended? Weren't those accounts still up even after you were suspended?
Oh yeah. The one that I was pushing really hard got taken down. But then in the meantime, people had sent me, it's weird because the screen names or like the account handles were like off by just a few, you know, digits and not digits, they're like numbers or letters. So I was like, oh, a lot of these screen names are, I can't believe I'm still saying screen name. That's like an AOL programming, but like the handles are like kind of similar. And like, I would try to like, you know, I wasn't like retweeting the image or the video, but I would copy the person's profile. And I'd be like, we have to report this person's profile. And like, if you want to go in and report specific tweets, like, okay, like, because I was doing that too. It's like a combination of both. So like, I can understand that that maybe to an idiot, it looked like I was sharing it, but it's like, you shouldn't have to jump through so many hoops that Twitter shouldn't make it so difficult to like report these accounts. It's like, it's clearly not a priority. So.
Well, that's what's bothersome is the fact that they're spending so much time filtering out political bullshit and whatnot, and they've picked a team. Like they care much more about affecting people's political ideas and perspectives than they care about getting child porn off Twitter. Are you on any the alternatives? Are you on like Parler or Flow?
Yeah, I'm on Parler. I'm like looking into like I just signed up for Rumble, so I'm gonna be putting that's gonna be basically like the new answer to YouTube is Rumble, and I think you can make money off your videos on Rumble as well. I need to like put my stuff on there.
We have, so tonight's show is what we're doing is we're actually attempting, I was actually in the process of sending some more emails too this afternoon of gathering some people from alternative platforms. Like we got Rockfin joining us today, Float. I'm still working on BitChute. I'm almost 99% positive somebody from BitChute will join us tonight. And then Content Safe. And all these alternatives to like the big, you know, these big platforms. Content Safe's really cool because They the guy who created it is a we have a mutual friend, Richard Groh from Tragedy and Hope, who has been around in the alternative media community forever, and me and him have gotten close throughout the years. But I asked him about it because I'm like, hey, you seem to be using Content Save. What the hell's going on? He's like, oh, he's a friend of mine. He's like, I'll hook you up. And what he does is awesome. So he's actually a huge fan. His name's Matt Raymore, I believe. He's a huge fan of alternative media. He's been a huge fan of podcasts and documentaries and all this stuff. And but he's a super like IT guy. Engineering, you know, software engineering, all this stuff, algorithms. He understands all this shit. It goes way over my head. Sometimes I'm like, I'm like, you're speaking another language. I have no idea what you just said. but he created a software, a way of, so you would upload, and he's working with me now, where hopefully this week, this podcast will be available on BitChute and Float and all the other alternatives, where you can upload onto one platform. And then he'll do the work of sending that video to all the other platforms. So basically similar to your podcast, you know how like you upload your podcast and then it basically, because you have a RSS feed, you know, it'll be on Spotify, it'll be on iTunes, it'll be on all the podcast apps, and you only have to upload it once. Well, what sucks about video is you can't do that. You know, you have to upload it to all these platforms, which is a fucking pain in the ass and time consuming. So what he actually has done is kind of create a method of kind of doing a similar thing that you do with your audio, upload it to one spot, and then it goes to all the other platforms. So it's a great idea. And so, you know, once I've kind of started talking to him, I'm like, you know what, we need to revisit censorship and these alternative platforms, because since we kind of did a Union of the Unwanted on censorship, a lot more people have been banned, a lot more people have been kicked off, and a lot more people are open to finally investing some time and effort to go to these alternatives. So like Float is one, you know, another alternative, like I said, BitChute, Rockfin, like Jimmy Dore's over there, Jason Burmes, Sam Tripoli has it's where he has his spiritual podcast Zero, and a bunch of people are going over there. It's kind of like a video alternative also.
What's so that one called?
It's called Rockfin.
Rockfin?
Yeah, Rockfin. Yeah, and they're really savvy with just monetizing. Like the guy who started it, I think was it Jamie, maybe it was. One of the guys will be joining us tonight, cuz Sam was actually helping him recruit some people, and I remember he reached out to me or whatever, and I'm like, honestly, I care so much about these conversations. I'm like, I don't want to put anything behind a paywall or whatnot. I want it to be everywhere. So I need to find a way of either doing a second show or a third show or whatever it may be, exclusively for their platform, or maybe just do, I don't know, multiple shows a week and put one of them on Rockfin, another one everywhere. But I just I'm so bad at monetizing. I'm like that artist who just like, I just want to do my art. I don't care about money, you know. But they are people who are on there, like Whitney Webb's on there.
Oh, cool.
Ryan from Last American Vagabond. Quite a few people that I'm a fan of are on there, and they all have like nothing but positive experiences there. And so it's just cool to see, like, YouTube's super convenient. You know, every phone has an app. Every TV has the app already on it. It's everything works together. It's easy. It's seamless. But now that like the censorship has gotten so over the top, it's gone to the point where it's kind of, you know, it's kind of forced people to be like, listen, fuck YouTube, because I can't even find anything interesting anymore on YouTube. You know, it's like, I mean, I don't know how you're still on there and I'm still on there and James Corbett is still on there. You know, I tell James, I'm like, well, James, how the fuck are you still on there? Especially James, because he has a huge following. But it's weird, like the people that they've picked to really completely ban. It seems like it's a lot of people who maybe sway one way or another, like in regards to they have a team, like somebody like yourself or myself or even James, like we don't like anybody, like we don't like any of the political options, like they're all crooks. And you know, so it's almost like, oh, they're safe because they're not gonna, they're, you know, we're on the team left and they're not gonna push for the team right because they're kind of down the middle. So I don't know if that has something to do with it or whatnot, but it is kind of weird. Like Red Pill 78, Zach from Red Pill 78 got kicked off completely, and a bunch of other people.
Yeah, with a name like Red Pill, I think like And that's the thing. I've gone back and forth like, fuck YouTube, fuck Twitter, fuck all the mainstream social medias. We got to find our own. But then it's like, all right. And then I'm like, well, no, I have like 22,000 followers on Twitter still. I'm still there. So it's like, not that I have to be a cop out, but it's like, all right, I have to talk in code in the ways I can, like for YouTube, for Twitter, like, you know, not that you're watering yourself down, but like stay on as long as you can, get people hooked on you, and then they'll follow you to whatever app, whatever place you go. It's just like, you know, you don't want to spend all day uploading to 10 different sites, but it may feel that way for a while. I think it's like the point is like, get your voice out there, get your message out there, cast the widest net that you can. So it's like, for me, I am holding on to like Twitter, YouTube. I'm there till they kick me off. And I think why I've lasted so long on YouTube is like, I'm not just talking about conspiracy theories and with conspiracy theorists. It's like, I'll interview comedians. I've interviewed porn stars. I interviewed Gary Sheffield Jr. So it's like, I think I'm keeping my people kind of pretty mixed up, and I'm either not big enough to like be a threat, or I'm not like hitting the same, you know, like dangerous notes over and over again to make me like a target, but who knows?
Yeah, that might be a part of it. Cause it's similar to my show. Musicians on, I have, you know, comedians on, I have a little bit of everything on, anybody that I find interesting, similar to yourself. So it's maybe that's what's helping, but I'm happy to see, I'm like you also in regards to like, as long as I'm on Twitter, as long as I'm on YouTube, I'm going to keep using them as a tool to get more people exposed to my work. So it's like, yeah, I don't like the way the platforms censor and how they treat certain people, but if that means maybe one or two more people might run into my podcast and listen to it and be a long time listener, why the fuck not? You know, why not use it while it's there? You know, we speak a lot about like, you know, just people who are seeking truth and this community. I like hearing people's stories on their journey to it. Like, have you always been somebody who went against the grain and was looking for answers, or was this more recent, or when do you feel like you, I guess for lack of a better term, you know, became woke?
Like specifically like woke in terms of, I'm blaming it really squarely on Sam Tripoli, because I was a fan of his podcast. And then I went to LA in March and I was like, I just felt drawn to him and his podcast. And I was like, I really want to do your podcast. He's like, well, what conspiracy theories are you into? I'm like, for sure. Aliens. Like, we could definitely talk about aliens. Like, they obviously exist. And, but I was definitely like a newbie, and then just being on the show and meeting, this other guy Off the Grid, Ryan, who I've now had on my show a few different times, and just like, just the open-mindedness of it all. And something about hearing Tripoli talk about like Tom Hanks, I was like, oh my God, like, yeah, he is like Mr. America's sweetheart dad or whatever. I'm like, he's just too clean that you don't trust it. And then just more and more. And then after I went back home after that LA trip, I just got into a few like 3 a.m., 4 a.m. rabbit holes. I watched the Fall Cabal series. I watched Out of Shadows and I just was like, oh shit. Then like, you know, red pilled my boyfriend, and then he would like red pill me back with something else. And then just like, and even once in a while, still I'll have sporadically like a really late night of watching like 3-hour videos and stuff. But I'd rather know. It's like, unfortunately, it's like the child porn thing. It's like, I'd rather know than not know. And at least when you know, you can begin to help to bring about change. You know, even if I'm not like physically going out and doing anything, it's like you're spreading the word. You're at least helping people to like wake up a little bit. And then I just started following the money on a lot of different things and figuring out like how, you know, I guess kind of government really works and interconnectedness internationally. And, you know, like people have sent me these big, you know, it's not for a beginner, but like, you know, you've seen the big chart of like everything from like the banking families to the Jesuits to, you know, there's super comprehensive linking all of it together. And I think I just finally am starting to get on board with this lizard people thing. Like, that was one at the beginning where I was like, huh, what? But now I'm just like, you know what? Like, if this is true, what else is true? Like, I, you know, it's better to like stay open, and not that you're like, you know, dumb for believing and looking into conspiracy theories. I think it's the opposite. It's like, it's good mental training to keep an open mind and being like, all right, what if, you know? I think it's teaching people to read for themselves, and it sucks. And that's the same thing. Like, nobody wants to be watching 10 different news channels to get the deal on one story. And that's unfortunately what like the mainstream media is forcing a lot of us to do, is to like, but then you see like Newsmax and OAN kind of gaining popularity. So there's always going to be a large group of people who don't want to do their own research, and because that takes time, and you know, it takes away from like Netflix and chilling. So yeah, I blame Sam Tripoli. and then it just, he like, I was like the rock at the top of the cliff, and he just was like, bing. And then just, you couldn't stop it after there. You just keep like learning and reading stuff and watching videos, and you're like, oh shit. Like Agenda 21 and the UN and the globalists, and then people are like, you starting to sound like Alex Jones. It's like, I wasn't even watching Alex Jones, but now I'm starting to like get into more of his stuff, and I'm like, oh, he's been talking about this stuff that's happening now for years and years. I can't imagine how these people feel that I've been talking about this stuff for like 10 plus years, and now it's all happening. I'm like I'm new to the scene, like not even a year have I been into it. So I can't imagine the frustration of people that are like, yeah, we've been trying to tell you.
Yeah, well, it definitely feels like that. One thing you do learn, like you said, you don't dismiss anything that sounds too crazy to believe, because you do a little bit of research and you find out like, okay, there's some truth here. There's some reason to believe that there could be something here. And it's some of these OGs who've been around forever. Alex Jones, I mean, he was at the Waco. He was protesting at Waco. I mean, he was 9/11 Road to Tyranny was one of those films that really red-pilled a lot of people. Jason Burmes, you know, he was a part of the Loose Change documentary that red-pilled a lot of people. I remember even the Zeitgeist movie back in the day, Peter Joseph's Zeitgeist movie, especially his first one that kind of shows you all the false flags throughout history, and then his second one that kind of explains to you how the whole banking system, how banks just create money out of nowhere, and how it's all just a big scam. Like, all the stuff, I mean, just it constantly, like throughout the generations, there's always like a movie that kind of changes people's perspectives, and hopefully red pills a huge portion of the population. I was hoping Jeffrey Epstein's that story was going to be the red pill for a big portion of the population, but, or maybe this COVID thing, but it always amazes me how like, you're like, okay, all these things you said I was wrong about, or you said was too crazy to be real. Now that it seems pretty obvious that these things were going on, why the fuck don't you believe me when I tell you the next thing? You know, it's like, it almost has to be public, and like, you need to hear it from the guy on TV to acknowledge that there's something there, that maybe I'm not a crazy person.
Well, I think because people don't want to believe.
That's true. That,
especially when it comes to like pedophilia and Epstein and the island, and like people just selling off their daughters for the summer or whatever, or forever. It's like painful to learn these truths. You're like, oh wow. Like, but you know, I mean, we all know that there's like, and I think it's the people who don't confront their own darkness who have a hard time confronting like the darkness in other people and in the world in general. So it's like, it's people who just pretend everything's okay. And it's like, that's why people who are creative, like musicians like yourself, or like comics or authors or poets, like you're already in touch with your own darkness. So it's like, you're just open, and I think you see more and you feel more than the folks that are like maybe less creative, and like they're just looking out of a smaller hole, you know?
Yeah, that's something I think you do see a lot with artists, is that you are in touch with, I mean, you just spend time self-reflecting and thinking about things much longer than the average person. I mean, the average person can get really caught up, and this is probably going back to where we started about our parents. I mean, how much of who they are is because they get so caught up with just working and being, you know, busy, that they never even have time to like hit the brakes and self-reflect and think about how they handled something, or how they should have handled something, or how they're treating somebody. It's not even something you even have time for, which I think is super important. I mean, it's funny how like technology in the beginning of civilizations were like, you know, you create better tools so you spend less time hunting. You create better transportation so you can get to your destination quicker. And then, so you figured like, oh, okay, as technology advances, we should have more leisure time, more time to ponder and think and do our hobbies. And it's like, no, all we do is just find more, you know, more reasons to work more and be brainwashed by materialism. And I think that's kind of some of the issues with some people is that they, some people who have other, either they don't pick up on social cues or they're rude or they're unhappy. I think it's because they haven't had enough time, like either meditating or doing psychedelics or just doing a hobby they enjoy or reading poetry, writing, you know, whatever it may be. I mean, there's so many weird things like, you know, one technique that people say to avoid text message conversations is write out a text message that you want to send and then just delete it and don't ever send it, but write it out. And there's something about just writing it out that that alone will feel like you're getting it off your chest. You talked about when you're a comic, like you feel like, okay, I can go on stage and I can get a bunch of shit off my chest. I can just tell you how I feel about stuff. And I'm sure there's a sense of like, feeling better because sometimes you really do just need somebody to listen. And so you can just like, I need to say this to somebody. I need to verbalize it. I need to talk about it. I just need to say it. And I found when I was writing, it would help, you know, I would write it out and it would almost be a good alternative to verbally talking, saying it and text messaging. So that I've actually done that technique where I'm like, I'm rip shit at the moment. I feel like writing this and responding in this manner. I'll write it out. Then I'll delete it. And I'm like, you know what? I feel better. And I'm glad I didn't send it, you know? So
yeah.
I think we got, there's a lot we can learn from writers and comics and artists.
I used to be afraid to, when I was like younger to like, and I think I still, as an adult, like afraid to keep an actual daily journal. Cause I'm like, but what if someone reads this? Like, what if my mom finds it? What if my boyfriend finds it? Like, what if somebody really knows how I really feel? Like, how scary is that? You know? And I was thinking like while you're talking about why the Epstein thing didn't red pill more people, because even look at the documentary that Netflix put out, it was like, some people are like, oh, wow, they're really outing stuff. And it's like, they're really not,
no,
you know,
they weren't.
They talked about the victims, but they didn't talk about the systems which enabled this to go on for so long. I don't think they talked about the involvement of the Clintons. Alan Dershowitz looked like a real douchebag. And I feel like he's trying to maybe kiss ass out of it. Cause he, I don't know. I feel like he got into some hot water with that.
Well, he's the only person who was on the island and apparently didn't see anybody young there. Like, are you serious?
Yeah.
That's why I was so disappointed on the Robert Kennedy Jr. Vaccine debate. I'm like, really, this is the person who's representing the vaccine. You know, the other side of the argument. I'm like, he's not a doctor and he's a creep. So it's like, nobody's going to take him seriously. So it's like,
yeah.
if Robert Kennedy Jr. actually, you know, had a debate with somebody that people respected and liked, it'd be slightly different. So I think it kind of didn't get the attention that it deserved. But that documentary, you're absolutely right. I mean, one thing that people like, there's so many people who are like, oh, did you see it? Did you see it? I'm like, yeah. And I'm like, I'm not saying that it wasn't well done. Like, yeah, it's you know, you want to, these victims, it's important to see what they went through and how emotionally it affected them. But it was a great way of getting tons of money for a documentary without really exposing any of the other people that it's, you know, that the elite that are linked to these crimes.
Yeah. And the actual names named.
Yeah. I mean, you talked about Tom Hanks. I mean, there's an old video of him. I remember seeing it like a month or so ago of him. I don't know if he was talking about Weinstein or if he was talking about Cosby or somebody, but he was being asked about like, oh, did everybody in Hollywood know this was going on? And they're like, yeah, yeah. He's just like, yeah. He's like, you know, but we kind of just, you know, we don't get involved or however he kind of tiptoed around the question. But I'm just like, listen, if I see a murder and I'm there, even though I don't murder the person and I do nothing, just because I'm there, if I don't say something, I go to prison. You know, I'm like, so.
It's also a really easy out. Like, if you're involved with it, it's easy for you to be like, yeah, we all know. We all just don't say anything. Isn't that also a perfect thing to say if you're totally fucking with it? Like, if you are guilty as hell, it's like, oh, yeah, we all, it's an open secret. We all, no one just says anything. That way you can't, there's no discernment between, like, levels of involvement. If it's all just so vague and everybody knows, you know, then everyone can hide.
Yeah. It's, you know, anytime I see a documentary pop up on Netflix and I'm like, oh, Epstein documentary on Netflix. I'm like, this isn't going to go that deep. I'm like, I was kind of surprised that they did one and they put it at all on Netflix, but they know that the average person is just going to watch it and then they're just going to move on with their lives. They're not going to research it and see who else he's linked to or see, you know, they're not going to run into Whitney Webb's research and really go deep. So it's, you know, that story was just one of those stories that it's like a lot of people should be like, holy shit. Like he's linked to scientists, Hollywood, politics,
Harvard. Yeah.
Harvard. I mean, Bill Gates, who lied about, you know, knowing him and mm-hmm. all this stuff. I mean, there's some good things that have come out of lockdown in regards to things like vaccines and Bill Gates being linked to eugenics and depopulation and all this stuff. Like, people are much more open to the discussion, I feel like, than they were 9 months ago. Like, if you said that Bill Gates was this evil person, you know, and they'd be like, yeah, okay, whatever, you know. And now I think people are starting to be like, okay, there is something fucking creepy about this guy saying, hey, there's too many people in the world, but also I want to give everybody a vaccine to make them healthier. Like, there's...
Yeah, and it's weird because I was talking to... I actually did an episode with Dr. Drew recently.
Yeah, I listened to it.
So
yeah.
Thrilled, and I asked him about Bill Gates, and he's like, yeah, I don't understand why people don't like Bill Gates. He's just trying to help people. And I was, like, looking at him, and I'm like, I wasn't looking to, like, really tear Dr. You know what I mean? Like, at the end of the day, I'm not going to convince Dr. Drew that Bill Gates is evil during a Zoom interview. You know, I just was like, the fact that there was no even curiosity, like the fact that I was like, oh, wow. All right. It's just, I just don't think so. We can't both acknowledge that he's got way too much power for a Microsoft guy. Like, it's not weird that he would do a left turn into vaccines. Like, he just wants to help people. We really believe that. And I was like, yeah, didn't he have like a mess of vaccines that went wrong in Africa and India? He's like, oh no, that was a like a rumor. Like I just was like, oh, okay. I guess we're not in the same page. I don't know. That felt like, cause he was going with me on a lot of stuff. He was like, yeah, there should be no sheltering place. The lockdown is all bullshit. I was like, oh yeah, me and Dr. Drew, we're cool. We're like, we get each other. And then Bill Gates, that was like a hard stop. So,
well, I remember I actually listened to that interview you did with him, and I was curious because I know he was one of those people that went like really hard in the paint in regards to the media is overblowing this, but I know he has links to Fauci because they did work together during the AIDS epidemic, and then you know, and there's a lot of issues with that, but he was still outspoken about it and talking about the media and all this stuff. So, and then I'm like, I wonder if they got to him and they shut him up. And then when I heard him on your show, I'm like, no, he's still saying the same stuff. He's talking about how the lockdown wasn't necessary. And, he's still, you know, seems like he's on the same page. And then I remember that part where you brought up Bill Gates and like, I'm like, we lost him apparently here. And I'm like, I wonder why.
Right.
You know?
I was like, where is the same intellectual curiosity? Like, it cuts off when it came to him. And I was like, ugh.
But who knows? Like, because Bill Gates is like the modern day Rockefeller in regards to, he has tentacles everywhere. He might be linked to him in one way or another.
He's got a tentacle up there. Yeah.
Somewhere up there. Yeah. Because if you haven't watched it, I highly recommend, I'll send you the link to James Corbett's 4-part documentary on Bill Gates. And I remember having Corbett on and talking about, I'm like, dude, there's stuff in that documentary. I've been into the Bill Gates thing for a while. I'm like, I had no idea. He's like, me either. He's like, I didn't even know how deep he went in regards to like just the media and big pharma and so many different stories and different organizations that he's linked to. It's just, it's insane. Like he almost has influence over everybody. And so you can see why he gets these interviews on TV and news stations giving medical advice. I'm like, you're not Dr.
Oh my God.
Gates.
I was looking at, like, not to cut you off, but I was looking at my podcast the other day. I think it was the iTunes store. And I was looking at just, what are their, like, you know, podcasts that they recommend? So Bill Gates is doing a podcast with Rashida Jones. Did you see this? I was like,
no.
What the hot fuck is going on?
Well, I think Hillary Clinton has one too. I'm like, and the worst part is you know that show, Stuff They Don't Want You to Know?
Yes.
So I used to love that show back in the day. They used to do like way before they did podcasts, they used to do short videos on YouTube, and they're awesome. They're short little videos that would go into like conspiracy theories and whatnot. And I remember having the guest on, Ben Bolin, on years ago.
Bill Gates and Rashida Jones ask,
and they have 4 stars.
The big questions. I love these reviews because the reviews, like a lot of them are like a lot of 1 star reviews. I don't know if you can tell, but yeah, the 1 star reviews are going, oh, and I left one too. I'm like, oh, great podcast if you love propaganda. So yeah, we represent in the reviews.
Stuff they don't want you to know. They did a vaccine podcast not too long ago. And I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, you guys go deep into so many topics. And it was so obvious that they were like just kind of pushing the narrative, you know, the mainstream narrative. And then all of a sudden, like I hear a podcast or I'm listening to one of their podcasts and there's an ad before the podcast for Hillary Clinton's podcast. I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? I'm like, people have to be really careful on, you know, who these podcasters are, YouTubers, and where they're getting their money from. And because, I mean, first of all, you can't make it any more obvious. If you have a advertisement for a Hillary Clinton podcast, I'm done listening to you. Like, there's no way you're going to be down the middle or you're going to expose anybody who's paying your salary. So it's, you know, there's been quite a few podcasts that I liked that once they got into the vaccine conversation, I'm like, oh, this is, they're not being honest here. And I feel like it just, it's kind of a reflection of how powerful Big Pharma is, that it's like the topic that you can't touch. You know, like you can talk about a lot of different shit, but it's like, no, you can't talk about that. I mean, look at what they did to Mickey Willis and the Plandemic documentary. I mean, the Plandemic documentary got pulled. I had Mickey Willis on. We talked for 3 hours and
I watched it. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. And I mean, when you hear about like just the lengths they went to just take down his stuff, it's like, if there's not anything there, like, then why the fuck are you like, why are they going to such extreme? Yeah. And why are you letting child porn on Twitter? And yet you guys are all coming together. Why don't you guys all come together and take down fucking child porn instead of taking down a documentary with a doctor who actually did work for the CDC and does have a resume and does know Dr. Fauci, stating her opinion? You know, why don't you guys come together and take down the child porn? Like, is this more dangerous than the child porn? Like, you obviously can come together and for one effort. Like, there's plenty of other causes that you could come together for. It's just, it's so frustrating. People don't see through that. When people were like sending me debunking articles, I'm like, the fucking video just went viral. I'm like, you think somebody researched everything Dr. Judy Mikovits said and already researched it? You know, with an open mind, looked at all these sources and then wrote an article about it and published it. I'm like, no. I'm like, this is just quickly put online and then Google will force feed you the articles by making sure it's the first thing that pops up. So then you just immediately think, oh, I don't want to.
Is Plandemic real or is Plandemic anything? It's like the extent to which YouTube has all the search terms by the balls, it's like they even have misspellings of searches redirected to where they want them to go.
Yeah, I've heard people say that. They're like, oh, you'll try to be creative and you'll use like a zero instead of a O. And then next thing you know, like, they figure it out and then they're, you know, censoring that. I'm like, I'm like, what we need to do is just not play their game and go somewhere else. But like you said, like, as long as you can be there, then I'm going to be there. But I'm okay with like eventually moving on and giving support to some other platform. And the more they do this, the more likely another platform is going to blow up and people are going to go there. Because there's a lot of people like us who are like, hey, you know what? I've been doing research for a long time. Back in the day, I could go on YouTube and find some interesting shit. Now I can't find anything. Like, I can't.
Wow.
You could search the exact documentary that you remember watching years ago, and it won't come up. It won't exist. So it's.
Now it's like this other movie called Out of the Shadows, which is like you can't find Out of the Shadows anymore. You have to like really dig, and or have like a specific link. Like, you can't just. It's not enough to just like YouTube search or Google search. It's like you got to know somebody.
Yeah. It seems like that. But thank you so much for being with me, Chrissy. For people listening who want to connect with you or want to get your podcasts, I know they're available everywhere, but I'm assuming you also have a website and you have a YouTube channel, all that stuff.
Oh, yeah, all the stuff. My one-on-one podcast is called the Chrissy Mayer Podcast, and that's on iTunes, YouTube, Spotify, SoundCloud. So audio versions only, and then YouTube is the whole video and audio thing. And I have a show on Compound Media on Mondays called The Wet Spot, or it's like sex, dating, relationship, like panel advice show. I'll have porn stars on, comedians on. That one's like more light and fluffy. And I've got a Patreon. I'm on Rumble and Parler and all the social media things at Chrissy Mayer, C-H-R-I-S-S-I-E-M-A-Y-R. Yeah, I think that's it. And then my website is chrissymayer.com, you know, where I used to have stand-up shows and things like that.
Hopefully that will come back eventually. Rogan's supposed to open his own comedy club in Texas. So.
Oh, yeah, that's going to be great. I believe that will happen.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So, I mean, we definitely need a laugh. I mean, that's one thing I think we all love about comedy is no matter how bad of a day you had, you go to a show, you laugh, everybody's kind of, you know, and nobody cares like if the political joke is making fun of you or not. Like, it just, people can kind of just.
Well, you know why the comedy clubs are shut down right now? Like, think about any great period in human history, like the Renaissance or the Enlightenment. Like, a lot of these ideas and movements were formed like in coffee houses, in groups where people would gather. And that is why the comedy clubs are on the absolute lowest priority list. Like, we're down there with strip clubs, you know, the places that make you the most happy, because they don't want, I think, a transference of ideas. It's like,
you're absolutely,
it's
right.
Real life censorship. It's like you can't go and hear people speak freely and like, oh wow, you know, maybe he's right. Yeah, I mean, like, we laughed, but there was something to that, you know. So,
well, same thing with the pubs. I mean, you look at you know, pubs, people used to go to pubs and debate mm-hmm. with one another, and you know, people joke around about how like the Constitution was debated and argued at pubs and over drinking. And so you figure you keep the restaurants open where you're isolated to your own table. You aren't supposed to talk to any yep. other tables. You wear a mask to your table, so it's a muzzle. You don't talk to anybody.
But drinking, that's when you talk to literally whoever's in the bathroom. You know?
Exactly. You go to the bar, you take a seat at the bar, whoever's sitting next to you, chances are you're going to pop up, you know, a conversation's going to pop up and you're going to be chatting, you're going to be sharing mm-hmm. ideas. And so many people during this whole lockdown, I found myself just like sparking casual conversation little by little. I'm like, hey, this doesn't make any sense, huh? I'm like, this is kind of bullshit, huh? Like, how does this make sense? Where's the science behind this? And people are like, yeah, you're kind of right. And it's like,
oh yeah, this is yesterday, the other day on the flight back from Florida, because I was visiting my dad and whatever for Thanksgiving, they're like, this was JetBlue over the loudspeaker, they're like, if you you have to wear a mask, even if you fall asleep and you don't have a mask on, we're gonna wake you up to put your mask on.
Oh, did I lose you?
And you could hear everybody laughing. And then the girl next to me, we're both like, yeah, well, what about social distancing? We're not talking about that. And it's like, yeah, it's fucking impossible. You're on a plane. Meanwhile, none of these airlines are doing 50% sales on their flights. You know, they're not like 50% capacity. That's what I meant. They're not like every other row. It's like, no, they want to make their money. But that blew me away. We're going to wake you up to put your stupid mask on.
Isn't that hilarious that you can't go to a game in a giant stadium where you can see each other apart, and many of them outside, right? You have no roof or whatever, but yeah, you can all be just a clusterfuck of people in a plane
for 3 hours sitting next to people and then right in front of you, right behind you. It's like, you're telling me the ventilation in this airplane is not as good as the great outdoors?
Exactly. Like, yeah. Well, yeah. That's why I think that this, I mean, science has a agenda, and it was amazing that like the science came out that like, oh, apparently it's actually safe to fly and it's, you know, less likely to go, you know. I'm like, this shit
how
is
convenient.
So
convenient. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. How convenient. Like, this shit is so contagious that during the height of the lockdown, everybody is isolated in their own house. Every town looked like a ghost town. This shit was still spreading like wildfire. And yet, with people sitting next to each other in a plane for hours, it doesn't spread. I'm like, you're fucking nuts. Like,
I should have had taken pictures and video when I was in the airports, like for going back and forth from Thanksgiving. And you see mainstream media, oh, travelers stay home. No, the fuck they didn't. The airports were still like not as packed as they could be, but plenty of people still traveling. Like, come on, man. Like, my dad and I had a fucked up relationship, but like, I still made the effort to go see him. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not. And I'm not going to use that as like a cop out. You know, it's like, I have a really small family. It's like, I'm still going to go. I'm going to make the effort. And people were not holding back. It's not like, you know, Grand Central Terminal in the city, that's kind of like a ghost town. But these planes were all full. Like, the airports were full, like very busy. So it's bullshit. It's like, when you really like get out into the world, it's like, there's enough people that I think are wising up that does give me hope.
Yeah, I kind of agree. I'd like to have my fingers crossed. I'm starting to see a lot of new podcasts popping up. I've been like asked to be on a lot of podcasts and been interviewed on a lot of podcasts, and a lot of these up and coming podcasts, these hosts that I'm talking to, I'm like, dude, this dude's going to be like, I think they're going to do well. You know, like, they're open-minded. They're kind of pushing interesting conversations. So all these new shows that are popping up, I'm really a big fan of, and I'm glad that they're doing it. It's funny how we talked about, like, red-pilling people. There's a cool new podcast called Deborah Gets Red-Pilled.
Oh, and, I've heard of that.
Yeah. And I think they're actually joining us tonight for the Union of Unwanted. But you should go on the show. It's awesome. Because what Deborah is this guy, Adam's mother-in-law. And he's like super libertarian, like listens to all our shows and a huge big fan. And then his mother-in-law is like CNN watching.
Addicted to CNN. A lot of work to do.
A lot of work. So. But she's super polite and super open-minded. So she'll just like, they do this podcast with guests. I've been on there. Charlie's been on there. Charlie Robinson. And I think Monica Perez from the Propaganda Report was just on there. And you just talk to her for hours and try to like get through to her. And it's just like, it really is like they're documenting this process of trying to get through to somebody who's been brainwashed their whole life.
That's so great, because the haters or the non-believers can listen. Oh, Deborah's asking the kind of questions that I would ask, you know?
Yeah. So it's a great concept. Like, that, just the whole idea of it is just pretty cool. And I think it hasn't been done before, because it's probably impossible to find somebody who's willing to say, hey, I'm going to go on a show and where people are going to convince me I'm wrong. And yep. You know, so it's
thing, as long as you're open and polite, that's all it takes. But it's amazing how few people actually have that, you know?
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Chrissy. If you can make it tonight, then we're streaming from 7 p.m. I don't know, whenever people stop talking, I guess.
Send me the thing. I don't know if you did already. And then I also would love to have you on my podcast, and maybe we'll have a slightly different conversation.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Let me know. I'd love to be on. So we'll reconnect. I'll make sure to add you to the Zoom, the guest list for the Zoom link. So if you can make it to hop in, like I tell everybody, like, jump in anytime you can. If you can't stay for long, leave, no big deal. But we're going to have some people from these alternative software companies and platforms.
That's great.
So we're going to try to brainstorm. I think it's going to be beneficial for everybody. Content creator, because they get to ask them some questions. And then the alternative platforms, because they get to get some feedback on what we like or don't like, or what we're looking for and would like. Hopefully it's a beneficial conversation for everybody. But yeah, if you can pop in for, even if it's just for a couple minutes, great. If not, then definitely we'll keep you in the loop for the next one.
Yeah, sounds good. Thanks, Ricky. Awesome.
Thanks, Chrissy. Stay in
touch.
All right,
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
I believe in the ripple effect.